It's 22 minutes to 4 o'clock. This is Fresh Air on WHYY 91 FM. Coming up at 4 o'clock, we'll be joined by Seymour Hersh, the investigative reporter whose new book is called The Price of Power, Kissinger in the Nixon White House. With me now on Fresh Air is the amazing Kreskin, the popular mentalist and entertainer who performs magic tricks, reads people's minds, and finds hidden objects. Most of his stage shows include his check challenge, in which he has someone hide the check, which was written to pay him for the performance. He estimates he's tried this at 5,296 performances and has failed to find the check only 9 times. I've read that he plans to eliminate this stunt. If it fails a 10th time, he does forfeit the check if he fails to find it. Kreskin will be one of the guests this weekend at the Fantasy Film Expo, which will be held at the Franklin Plaza Hotel at 17th and Vine. Kreskin will perform Saturday evening at 8. For more information about that performance or about the Fantasy Film Expo, you can call 1-800-225-0088. That's 1-800-225-0088. Kreskin has appeared on Carson about 75 times, about 100 times on Mike Douglas, and 50 times on Merv, and he's about to make his first appearance on Fresh Air. Welcome to Fresh Air.
I love the title, Terry, Fresh Air. That is truly, radio... always has had a dimension that television never had, and that's the imagination.
Hmm.
I always used to think to myself, why is it radio shows lasted so much longer? But then again, you tire, the visual area is so strong that you can tire it faster, and you could mentally change the sets when you wanted to,
right,
of a show and what have you.
Well, here's a question I have for you. If you can read people's minds
and are able to get into it,
yeah. Why did you decide to use it as entertainment as opposed to, I don't know, any of the other options that would have been open
working
for you?
The CIA? No way. You know what happened, Terry? I always knew. It's interesting to look at this in retrospect. Here you spoke, and so well, I appreciate it, about the fantasy convention, the first time in my life, and I'm like a kid. I really am like a kid because my career started with fantasy. When I was a little boy, I read a comic book. I was visiting some people in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Here I am 4.5, 5 years old, and someone gave me a comic called Mandrake the Magician. Well, he really wasn't a magician. Every time the criminals were there, he would gesture hypnotically, and the criminals would be transfixed, immobilized. The guns would change into flowers, but only in the mind of the criminals. And it fascinated me. It fascinated me that there was... I wasn't intrigued with the Phantom. I have the first Superman comic, the first Captain Marvel comic, and so forth. I wasn't intrigued with physical prowess. And I guess through my life, I've never been a spectator sports fan, although I play rocketball, cross-country ski. I've hiked up the Grand Tetons, gone down the Grand Canyon, and what have you. But that's my stopping the world and getting off. And I knew whatever I did would have to do with the mind. And I think coupled with that, I was always enamored with the magic of show business. I don't mean the magic, the magician of show business. I seem to have always wanted to perform. People said, Kreskin, there were a lot of theories when I was a kid that I would be a priest. My God, that would have been the end of the church. And why they ever thought that, I don't know. But I think I've always been interested in public expression. And if I didn't do this for a living, what would I do? I would probably do it on the streets for nothing. It's not the most important thing in the world, but for me, it's the thing I do best. I just feel at home on the stage, whether that's an audience of, I just finished a tour 3 days ago, 13 days. I did 23 cities, but and some of them were 3,000 people in an audience, but I performed for the Armstrong Cork Company with 18 people as part of my private party affair.
You mentioned sarcastically before the possibility of using mentalist powers to work for the CIA. But if you decided to not be an entertainer, what would the options be for you?
Well, I had an office for 8 years with a clinical psychologist in South Orange, New Jersey. My background is in psychology. When I was going to college, I was already traveling as an entertainer. I did work with Dr. Harold Hansen for 8 years. I used to see up to 30 of his patients a week, using in those days what I thought were purely hypnotic techniques to as an auxiliary to his therapy. It was a kind of supportive therapy. In the last couple of years, which was a great revelation to me, and I think we both learned from it, we realized that, one, hypnosis wasn't necessary, and two, hypnosis was a colossal waste of time. I know of no situation that I can think of where hypnosis is of any additional support to a situation. The only people who apparently are hypnotized are the hypnotists.
Well, I know you've spoken out against hypnosis.
As a trance.
And against its use for courtroom testimony.
Well, that's serious. I have felt, Terry, that even though an entertainer, I've spent so much time in public and with my own television show and all the guest shows that if I can speak in some area that I feel some responsibility for, I may not consider myself an authority. I don't know what an authority is, but I spent my life in the area of the power of suggestion. And, you know, 6 years ago, if you and I sat across this table, we would have talked about how people are being made to recall the scenes of crime and in criminal investigations and so forth. And at that time, I was heavily criticized for saying that there may be a very rapid turnabout in this movement to use hypnotism to augment the investigation of a crime. Well, there's a very frightening situation. There's a case of a young man at a college campus who saw a hit-and-run accident. And a day later, he was apparently hypnotized by authorities and made to relive the scene, and he recalled the license plate, in total detail, the license plate. And the police were quite enthusiastic until they found out that it was the license plate of the president of the university. The night of the hit and run, the president was having a private party. His car was locked in the garage. The car never left the garage. Now, the kid did not lie. I know there's no reason why he would have lied. But under the pressure of being told he must remember or will remember, he felt pushed, and maybe he saw the car in a parade or in a ceremony. Our minds are very tricky. We've been taught, and I can remember my early days studying psychology, and maybe some people listening now hear the same thing. We've been taught that the mind is like a computer, that everything we're exposed to is impressed upon our mind and may or may not be accessible, but is there. There's no evidence that this is the case. The true evidence is something that I have said in my concerts, my public shows for years, just as a parenthetical phrase, and psychologists are now finding to be quite true. Our memories change from day to day and year to year. As we grow older, what we looked upon in a very childlike way when we were kids, because we didn't have the sophistication or the things looked bigger, things were less understood, we sophisticate. We remember with maybe an additional quality about it or some change. Furthermore, as we talk about childhood experiences or parents and aunts and uncles tell us about them, they are further elaborated upon. And there is very little evidence that people really remember the vivid memories before the age of 3 years or so. So what's happening is when a person is apparently hypnotized, a number of things are contaminating what he's recalling. Rumors, what he's read in the newspaper. Also, Terry, unfortunately, and none of us can honestly say we're totally without prejudice, if we have preconceived notions of what kind of person could have committed the crime or what we would like to think they were like, because we all have fear of the streets under certain circumstances, it can enter in. So no longer is it that the person is telling the truth. The real factor is the person's imagination is expanding by leaps and bounds. And when you use the imagination...
So you don't object to hypnotism. You object to hypnotism because you think in that trance state your imagination could get the better effect. But you do believe that hypnotism can create trances.
I don't believe there's a hypnotic trance.
Oh, okay.
I really don't. I believe there is suggestion. It's very interesting. Right yesterday, the front page of the New York Times and all the New York papers and the network news carried a very significant story. When People Magazine did the story last year that I was against hypnotic information brought into court, I was heavily criticized. I mean, it's a good thing that the criticism was not physical, because I don't wear a bulletproof vest. But slowly it quieted down as state after state started to rule against hypnotic evidence. What is scary, and this doesn't make anybody happy, I would think, except the criminal, is some criminals are now going to have to be retried that, there was enough other peripheral evidence around it that hypnosis evidence wasn't the only thing. But I held a press conference last year on the steps of the state capitol of New Jersey. I hypnotized 14 people, including the head of the head of the organization of lobbyists. It was outdoors because a similar ruling as in New York had gone through, but nowhere near as firm and as serious as the ruling 2 days ago. These 14 people were regressed back in their life, and it was quite dramatic because one woman saw herself hit by a car and waking up the next day, couldn't understand why her dad was looking at her in the daytime because he worked as a milkman. Then she said, "Oh my God, I'm in the hospital." Another man saw himself in a canoe and the canoe was sinking. And another gentleman was being attacked by a teenage gang when he was a kid. Well, it was very, very dramatic. I mean, to see each of these people, and they were reliving it. And when the demonstration was over, and apparently they came out of the trance, I said to the press, including worldwide press, because I had good coverage, I said, "Folks, this is the reason I'm against the use of hypnotic techniques, the information being brought into court." And people looked and said, "What the heck is he talking about?" I said, "Why don't you interview these people?" Well, the New York Times correspondent turned to one woman, Ginny Tate, and said, "Well, do you remember what you just relived under hypnosis?" She said, "I remember, but what do you mean relived? Well, what just happened?" She says, "I never was hit by a car." The man who was sinking in a canoe said, "I never sunk in a canoe." The man that was being attacked by a teenage gang said, "I never was attacked by a gang." 1 hour earlier, I had programmed them to remember false information. And I'm going to tell you something. There couldn't have been a psychiatrist around who could have told whether they were telling the truth or not.
How did you program them?
I just spent about 20 minutes in a room and said, "Listen, each of you pick, let's decide on a dramatic incident." Someone said about a near drowning. "All right, start to rehearse the drowning in your mind. Just rehearse it. Because when I tell you about this later on, that's what you will see in your mind. There's no evidence of a trance. You will be no more hypnotized later on than any of you are now. All that's happening with so-called hypnosis is the stimulation of the imagination." And it was...
So you're saying they were faking it because you asked them?
They were imagining false information. The lobbyist in whom someone stuck a needle to prove that he had no pain and he just distracted himself. He was wide awake as you and I. He said, "You know, that memory was more real than a childhood memory that he had tried before when I was trying to do it legitimately. The scary thing is, forget about getting false information, misremembering. What about the next step, Terry, 1984, where people are possibly programmed to remember false information to protect guilty people? He was with me all night. We were playing cards. I remember he fell out of his chair when he was drunk at 10 after 10. And that is not hearsay. I could demonstrate that in 1 hour with a person. The final thing terrifies me. If you can get a group of people to bear protective witness against a criminal, then you can get a group of people, if they want to bear false witness against an innocent person. Videotape the demonstration of the trance. It looks convincing to a court, a jury, Terry. It looks convincing to a judge. So when the Supreme Court of New York said, the key Supreme Court justice said, "I feel that the use of this technique is even jeopardizing the constitutional rights of witnesses." That's what we're talking about. I've said enough on it, but you can understand I have some serious aspects to my work.
Yeah. The field that you're in of mentalism and performance is a field that is notorious for cons.
Oh, blowing pages to make pages turn over and objects bend and everything else, you know, and what have you.
Do you think that you as a mentalist performer have any obligation or responsibility to expose people who you know are really frauds? Or do you think you should get away with what you can and show business?
Well, that's an interesting question. You've asked two questions there. There's legitimate entertainment and there's legitimate illusion because show business is part of illusion. You have to understand, I don't claim to be a psychic. I have no supernatural powers. I have no psychic... I cannot understand, Terry, why more psychics don't spend more time at racetracks, but we will just philosophize on that, because if I had such powers, all right, if you can't do it for yourself, raise funds for a needy charity by just deciding what horse is going to win. The kind of work I deal in involves to a great deal the power of suggestion. Dr. Margaret Mead, the last couple of years of her life, became very interested in my work, and I considered her the most worldly woman I ever met in my life. She wasn't just an anthropologist. She was a woman of the world. She used to say to me, she says, Kreskin, people are going to call you a medium. They're going to call you a psychic. She says, of course you're none of these. You're a sensitive. She says, there's really no society in history that hasn't had, even primitive tribes, somebody that was so tuned in to the feelings of their tribe, their people, that they could give them back what was bothering them. And, you know, some people would have said it was psychic or soothsaying or mediumistic. But I think when a blind person, if he has had eyesight, loses his sight, he can within a year take on an extraordinary sense of hearing. Hear a person before you even know the person, and often tell you who the person is because of the sophistication of a sense to a degree that you and I haven't attained. In many respects, that's what I'm doing. As far as those who have made false claims and so forth, I think the scary thing, the really serious thing, aside from the cultists, I mean, let's face it, they are the monsters in our culture because there are at least 2,000 cults, but certainly the people who are suggesting, well, now, if I can change the shape of an object or move an object or change the grains in it, why can't I change the molecules of the cells in your system and begin to heal and begin to give an individual false hope? Because, Terry, while you and I may see and see through the danger of such irresponsibility, could you really stop your closest friend, if that person had a terminal illness, from spending everything if everything else failed? And that is really tragic.
So would you expose someone?
Yes, they would have to be exposed.
Fraudulent claims?
Yes, I think they would. But at the same time, there's another side to it. There's an old saying amongst magicians that if you can't make it as a magician, you become an exposer, and you just expose wantingly. You can explain anything away that seems to be non-physical. If you can't find trickery, you can say it's coincidence. And if everything is coincidence, it wreaks havoc with our statistics. But there was a psychoanalyst who fled from Freud. They argued very vociferously over his theory. Carl Jung had a theory of synchronicity. Fascinating psychoanalyst. He was kind of mystical. I don't believe all the things he went into, but he was a wise man. And he felt there were forces in our culture. And don't get anyone start saying Kreskin's become a mystic, but it's interesting. He felt there were forces in every human being's lifestyle where things came along that seemed coincidence. You'd been writing and thinking about a friend for a long time and suddenly bumped into them. And he felt it wasn't coincidence. He felt there was something about humanity that we just didn't understand that had to do with another dimension, and I don't necessarily mean Mars. If I'm being vague, Terry, it's because...
Is it part of the business?
It doesn't have to be. And I love the questions. I find them some of the most... they have insight to them. I think the years I spent in psychology have taught me something. I've never seen a field more filled with science fiction than psychology. And I don't know if many of the theories today will be accepted 1 year from now.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking.
I could talk to you for hours. You are truly an interesting person to be interviewed by.
Oh, thank you very much.
I like your style, and I want to tell you, she's got class.
Thank you. My guest has been the amazing Kreskin, and he's going to be performing this Saturday evening as part of a fantasy and film expo that will be happening Saturday and Sunday at the Franklin Plaza Hotel at 17th and Vine. Kreskin's performance will be Saturday evening. That's this Saturday night at 8. And I'll give you a phone number for any more information. It's 1-800-225-0088. Again, that's 1-800-225-0088. Thanks again for being here.
Thank you, Terry. My pleasure.
It's 2 minutes to 4 o'clock. This is Fresh Air on WHYY FM in Philadelphia. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, I'll be joined by Seymour Hersh, author of the new book, The Price of Power, Kissinger in the Nixon White House. That's coming up in just a couple of minutes on Fresh Air. This is guitarist Borelli LeGren.